Okay, guys. So I want to talk about a phenomenon that appears multiple places in Tanakh and even more in Chazal, but methodologically it is important to understand this, and that's what is known as Midrash Shemot, or Midrash Hashem. So what's a Midrash Hashem? In what sense? Very good. Right, Midrash Hashem is when we explain somebody's name as representative of their identity, of something about them. Right. Now, most of the time, we're familiar with this from Chazal, because right, Chazal, both in the Midrash and the Gemara, are obsessed with Midrash Shemot. Right? Right? Every time. Why was his real name was X, so why was he called Y? Because... right? They do it with, they do it with everybody, right? They do it with Ruth. They actually think it's her real name, but, right, they understand her name. They do it with Mordechai. They do it with Esther. They do it with basically all the sons of David. But here and there, the Torah itself does it, right? The Torah itself provides a midrash. A Midrash Hashem, an interpretation of the name. Now, it gets confusing, because sometimes the interpretation of the name is not pshat, right? Even though the Torah itself says it, which creates all types of complexities, right? The most classic of that is arguably the most famous Midrash Hashem in Chumash, which is Moshe. That Bat Paro calls it Moshe, ki mehamayim mishitihu, right, because I drew him from the water. Right, problem being, it's wrong. Right, we know it's wrong. Right, because what if his name actually was supposed to be drawn from the water? What should his name have been? Mashui or something. Drawn. Moshe is drawer. Right, the drawer, the one who draws someone, not the one who is drawn. Right, so we know that it's not right, which only begs the question, what exactly is the Torah doing? It's clearly making a point, right? What the point is fascinating, besides the fact that we know that that's not pshat, and this Nitziv already points out, that pshat in the name Moshe, is that, what does it mean? We talked about this last year, but maybe I'll remind you, Parshat Shemot. It means son, right? Moses means son in Egyptian. Right, Ramses, right, is Ra Moses, the son of the sun god, right, of Ra. Right, so Moshe means some, or Moses means something more like sunny boy, right, junior, right, something like that, right, the son of. It's a very generic name like that. But clearly the Torah is trying to make a point, and is it making the point, you know, even though that he's being drawn out of the water, eventually he will draw the Jews out of the water, right, because he'll be responsible for creating Yom Suf, which is sort of the pinnacle of Yetziat Mitzrayim. In our parasha we get, and not just in our parasha, but, well, both the beginning of our parasha and the end of the parasha, we have Midrash Shemot. But the Torah, especially in the Yaakov Esav stories, plays with us to no end with the Midrash Shemot. What Midrash Shemot do we have just in Parshat Toldot? Before we have Yaakov, we have Esav, right? We have Esav in Rishon. You read it this morning. Where, what's the Midrash Shem that the Torah provides? Edom. Al Kein Garashima Edom, because he ate the red, right, the red lentil stew. Oh, very good. And this is exactly my point, is that Midrash Shemot are very important, but you also got to figure out what they're doing. Because if I asked you the first half of Rishon, why is... Assuming you already know that Esav is referred to as Edom, and you only read the first half of Rishon, why would you say he's called Edom? Because he was born Kulo Adoni. He was born red. But then the Torah tells you, no, that's not the point. Right? That's not the point. Why is he called Edom? Because he ate the red soup. Yaakov also gets a midrash shame. What does Yaakov mean? So in pshat, you assume it means teal, because he came out holding Ba'kei Vesav. Except the Torah goes out of its way to provide another midrash shame. Not one that it sanctions, but one that it puts in the mouth of Yaakov's adversary, which is... Yeah, and what does Esav say? V'akveini zefa'amayim al-kein karashimo Yaakov. He tricked me twice, and that's why he called him Yaakov. Right? And Yaakov gets one more midrash shame. Just Yaakov gets one more midrash shame in the Torah, which is... Yisrael, kisarita im Elokim v'adam v'tuchal, because you fought with God and people and won. Right, so Yaakov and Esav, more than anybody in Tanakh, get midrash shame, but both in the case of Esav and the case of Yaakov, there are at least two potential midrash shame on their original name, and then Yaakov gets yet another one, right, on his name, Yisrael. So it seems that whatever Midrash Shemot try to do in the rest of Chumash, to understand the Yaakov and Esav stories, you must understand the notion of a Midrash Shem, because it's like, right, it is obsessively used in this story. So what exactly is the point, therefore? So now let's go back to it. What is the point of a Midrash Shem? So what is the point? Yeah, what type of idea? What is it? What type of idea? It's pointing to what? It's pointing to someone's identity, right? It's telling you something about the person, right? But I think that it's more than that. I think the way the Midrash Shemot are used in the Yaakov Esav story are to tell you it's not predictive. Right? It's not predictive. It doesn't tell you who you're going to be, because everyone has certain tchunot, right? Everyone has certain personality traits and things like that. But how they use them is not predetermined, right? You do have certain traits, you have certain talents, right? Meaning you're not, when you're born, as much as we want to say you're a blank slate, we know you're not a blank slate, right? There was no way with my genetic code that I was going to be a successful basketball player. It's not possible. It's just not possible, right? Like, I have a very close friend in Chavrusa whose brother-in-law was a college basketball player, right? He married a Giyaret, and at the wedding, we have a picture of the two of us. If you ever wanted to understand why I'm not a basketball player, I'm 5'1", he's 6'10". Right? And you understand the difference, right? I can't even describe what this picture looks like. So you knew I could not, right? I could not be a basketball player, right? But let's assume that, you know, I like public speaking, right? And I'm not bad at public speaking, okay? So I could plausibly have taken the path I did in the rabbinate and education, but I could have easily decided to be a lawyer, right? I don't know. Whatever. Take your pick. And I think what Midrashei Shemot do is they point out not who you're going to be, but the potentials of who you could be. But which one you take is up to you. And the way it does it is by tricking you, right? Is by playing with your mind. Because Esav, being Edom, could have been innocuous. Right? It could have been totally innocuous. He came out red, so we called him Edom. But he chose a path in which his Edomness was very negative. It reflected his haste and his capriciousness, and his lack of ability to assess long-term goals, right? His short-sightedness. And the Torah is playing with you. It's saying youth, he could have been Edom for innocuous reasons, because he was red. He was ruddy. End of story. Like David HaMelech. He could have been. But he actively chose the path of Al Ken Garashim Edom, because he decided to give up his birthright for red soup. Yaakov is interesting. Because Yaakov also, at the beginning of the parsha, what do you assume? That why is he called Yaakov? Because he grabbed onto his brother's ankles, completely innocuous. At the end of the parsha, what are you left wondering? Whether Esav is right. Right? Whether the path that Yaakov has chosen is Vayakveni Zephamai Malkin Karashim O Yaakov. And a lot of the rest of the story of Yaakov is testing out whether this is the case. Because Yaakov does run a lot of his life on deception. Right? He does. He 100% does. Until what point? Right? And if you think about the arc of his life, right, when does he redeem himself from the negative midrash shame that Esav ascribes to him? Right? When he stops running, right? He stops running from Esav. He stops running from Lavan. Right? Lavan, he sneaks away. Right? He sneaks away. Lavan tricks him. He tricks Lavan. Right, this is part of his life until he leaves and Lavan chases him and he confronts him, at which point Yaakov stops being the person who deals with his problems by trickery and running away and confronts Lavan face to face, and that resolves their relationship. And then he returns to Israel, and what does he do? He hears that Esav's coming, and this time, so he begins to confront him. Right? He begins to confront him. He sends presents. He starts the process. And then what does he do in the middle of the night? Runs away. And you think this is going to be Yaakov again, right? Okay, right. I run away. I trick. I don't confront. And then he gets caught by the Malach, which according to Chazal is Saroshel Esav. And he fights him. And then what is his name? Yisrael, because you won in open battle. I mean, you had your adversary, and you fought him directly. And then, what's the next story? Where he actually confronts Esav, right? And they resolve it. Because it's a story of Yaakov redeeming himself from the identity that Esav has given him through Yaakov, of being someone who does everything in stealth because he can't do it in the open. And that is his life for a lot of it until he gets the courage to actually confront Lavan and then confront this Malach thing, right? And then confront Esav himself. And for Yaakov, so much of the story is understood if you realize it's a journey from the Midrash shame of Vayakveni Zef Amayim to the Midrash shame that closes Yaakov's redeemed identity, which is Kesarita Melkim Vadam Vatuchal. And I think that's the point of Midrash Shemot, is it's not giving you an identity and a path. It's telling you, right, that you have certain qualities, but what you do with them is your choice. Right? Which way you choose to define yourself is your choice. But that matters. And your name, the name that people will know you, will reflect which identity you ascribed to that. And I'll just say that a few years ago I realized that I think that the Gemara, which is really playing on this idea, is a Gemara in at the end of Shabbos, where the Gemara says, if someone is born under the star of Mars, under Mars, right, the zodiac powers of Mars, right, which is, what is Mars in Hebrew, in the Gemara? Ma'adim. If you're born under Ma'adim, so then you have two choices. What could you do? This is Gemara. You could either become a murderer, or you could be a shochet or a mohel. Right? Meaning, if you're born under Ma'adim, you have a bloodlust. You have a certain violent nature that can play out negatively, and you can be a murderer, or you can do, you know, in modern times, you could be a sturgeon, right? But whatever, you could be a mohel, you could be a shochet. But, you know, I wonder if, and the Gemara is basically saying the same thing, right? If you have certain tchunot, you have certain personality traits, they're going to express them in the way you live your life. But whether that's positive or negative is up to you. But I think it's not accidental that the Gemara picked specifically Ma'adim, right? If you're born under Mars, which is red, right? Ma'adim. So then you have a choice of how to channel redness. And at some level, I think Chazal are playing on this, right? That Esav was red. He was red. He was. But that didn't determine the way he expressed that redness. He chose that. And I think that Gemara is sort of in the back of its mind playing on these Midrash Shemot here. Okay? But that's, I think, something you have to keep in mind. Again, it doesn't happen so much in Torah. It happens a lot in Breishit, right, with all the Shvatim, right? All the Shvatim get this, right? Get the Midrash Shem, right? And then you get Moshe. And then after that, you don't really get it for a while, right? The next time I think you get it, I think the next time, though, maybe there's one in the middle, is Shmuel, right? After Moshe, I don't think you get one until Shmuel, right? Unless you want to count Yehoshua getting an added yud as sort of a Midrash Shem of some sort. I don't know. But at any rate, it's an important methodological tool to understand definitely Breishit, Moshe, and then later on Shmuel, Shaul, things like that. And again, by, you know, now over time by a lot, but by Shmuel, you realize that it does this a lot. Right? Because he's called Shmuel because, according to the Psukim, because she lent him to God. Right? Except, what should his name have been? Shaul. Right? Obviously, that Midrash Shem is playing with your head. Right? Because he's called Shmuel, but according to the own Midrash Shem, he should have been Shaul. And that Midrash Shem is supposed to make you wonder about the connection between Shmuel and Shaul, which is like the drama of the first half of the book, right? It's not accidental that his Midrash Shem is a Midrash Shem for Shaul, not for Shmuel, right? The Ibn Ezra already points this out. Okay, fine.